This episode is brought to you by Home Team Inspection Service. When you partner with Home Team, you're getting more than a home inspection. You're delivering the home team experience. With a team approach, fast turnarounds, and package options that include home inspection warranties, Home Team helps real estate pros stand out. Plus, many locations now offer pay at close, giving your clients flexibility when they need it most. Schedule your next inspection with confidence at hometeam.com.
In the end, I think a lot of people, and I think this is particularly true of people of color, this is particularly true, I see this in women a lot, I don't want to step into leadership until it's perfect. There is no such thing. You just got to go and you got to lead.
Well, hello, friends. It is Julia Lachey, and it is the Color of Money podcast. Thank you for tuning in yet again. I am joined today by my, don't tell the other ones, y'all, but it's my favorite co-host, Uncle Emmerich is here with us. I can't say that. I take it back, because when you're not here, Emmerich, I tell Daniel that. And when y'all not here, I tell Bo that. So I'm lying, y'all, but they're all my favorite. But we do not have Daniel or Bo. Today it is Uncle Emmerich and I, and Unc has brought a friend. Friend that he knows through 100 Black Men, which is actually where Unc is tuning in from today. He is currently at the 100 Black Men conference, convention. I don't know what y'all call it, Emmerich.
Convention.
Tuning in from his hotel room. And the guest we have today is also in 100 Black Men. His name is Chike. Chike, do I say, is it Chike Agu?
Yes, perfectly.
We have some really powerful people on this podcast, as you all know. Chike, you may be maybe our 100th guest, or coming close to it at least. And many, many, many people are tremendously inspirational, fascinating, just incredible people. And I want to read Chike's full bio, because I need you to get the full effect of who we are talking to today. Chike Agu is a senior advisor at Harvard's Project on Workforce and Accenture, one of the world's largest technology and services firms. A Fulbright scholar, recognized authority on the future of work and economic opportunity, and the first person in his entire family, right? Born in America? Yeah. Chike was previously appointed by President Biden to be the Chief Innovation Officer at the U.S. Department of Labor, reporting to Deputy Secretary and later Acting Secretary Julie Hsu. He led efforts to use data, emerging technologies, and innovative practices to advance and protect American workers. These efforts included creating the department's first enterprise data strategy, serving a pivotal role in a $2 billion modernization of the nation's unemployment insurance system. I'm going to skip a little bit. He's all, because it's long, y'all. He's been a teacher, a policy official at America's largest school systems, corporate strategy director at higher education systems. A lot of things he's done in the education to help American workers and to help affordability and things of that nature. Chike holds degrees from Tufts University, Harvard Graduate School of Education, Harvard Kennedy School, University of Pennsylvania Wharton School. Are you still in school? Chike, do you still go to school?
No, I've been out of school for a while.
Degrees. This is a lot of degrees. He's a life member at the Council on Foreign Relations, Presidential Leadership Scholar, 40 Under 40 honoree from Wharton and Washington Business Journal, board member of American Student Alliance. Chike was appointed by Governor Westmore, vice chair on Maryland's Higher Education Committee. So on and so forth, friends. We got pages and pages of it. But most importantly, Chike is a leader. And Chike is here today to talk to us about leadership, particularly in today's environment where, I mean, to be quite honest, we could see some better leadership. Yes. So we're going to be talking with Chike today about all of those extraordinary accomplishments and how we all can collectively use the information for the betterment of ourselves, our families, our communities to lead and grow and build wealth. Chike, welcome. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
Welcome, Chike.
No, thank you for having me. And let me just say something about this podcast. I really want to thank you all for creating a space to talk about this and for a space to talk about it for people of color, for Black people, and really for the country. Again, as we know, when Black people do well, America does well. And I just thank you for doing this, because we don't have enough of these spaces.
Thank you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
So tell us about yourself, the kind that's not on paper, you know?
I'd probably say probably the most formative thing about me kind of very much dictates my life. And, you know, I would say President Clinton, I got to spend a little bit of time with him earlier in my career. He has a phrase from his book that I love, which is, we are all prisoners of biography. I think that's true. and it's very much true of me. And so even before I was born, you read a little bit of it. My family is a very classic immigrant story to this country. My family is from a far and out of the way village in Nigeria that most Nigerians themselves will never visit, never see. Hmm. None of my grandparents went past middle school. My parents were born on streets that were unpaved then. They're mostly unpaved now. They had Peace Corps volunteers in their classrooms. And what changed life for them and by extension for me was that they got to come to the United States of America and study and be students at American higher education institutions. And that's a very fraught conversation right now. And without that, I would not be here. Very candidly, I am the first person in the entire history of my family born in this country.
Wow.
And I like to think I've tried to repay the favor because I got a big favor by that being allowed for me. And so I've tried to dedicate myself, whether it's in the private sector, the public sector, social sector, to trying to kind of recreate that type of opportunity. And it's why I think Dr. Peace and I have always become friends. I know that very much guides him as well. And so I've always looked up to him and appreciated trying to follow his example. But that guides me. I'm here because the coin of fate flipped and landed in my favor. And I'm here with you versus in a number of other places that I could have been in life. I'm here because God said, you know what, you're going to be in this place versus someone else who's probably smarter, better looking, more qualified. And I've tried to do as much with that as I can. I was born and bred outside of New York City, grew up in northern and central New Jersey. And then really, I've spent my life in kind of three buckets with the same focus. One bucket has been a lot of time in the public sector. So my first job was working for the mayor of New York City on an education policy in the mid-2000s. I was 21 years old when I started there. I worked on everything from guidance counseling to helping kids get access to college and things like that. Got to when I was in graduate school, worked with Governor Deval Patrick, when he was the governor of Massachusetts, also on education policy. This is in the late 2000s and going into the beginning of the Obama administration. And then, as you said, most recently with President Biden at the Department of Labor. Secondly, you know, in the private sector. So recovery management consultant from places like McKinsey, corporate strategy director at the advisory board company, working on higher education technologies, working with General Stan McChrystal at his firm where I led strategy at the McChrystal Group. And then currently now working with a number of funds and companies and Accenture trying to do this. And then also in the social sector, I've been a nonprofit CEO focused on broadband access. That's what I was doing when I first met Emmerich all those years ago, where I made sure that people were getting internet who didn't have it. I worked with nonprofits focused on community colleges, helping them serve people during the pandemic who had lost jobs, get new jobs, and then serve on a number of nonprofit boards now, including American Student Assistance, which is one of the biggest education philanthropies in the country. A lot of different types of work, but the through line through that is one, if you put education and skills together in the right way for the right people, you create a lot of economic opportunity. That's been true in my family, and definitely I think it's true more globally. I think secondly, the thing that you stumble upon is you get to work with great leaders. I have had that privilege. I'm looking at Emmerich as one, but I think about, you know, getting to, from a bit of a distance, see Mike Bloomberg work as when he was the mayor of New York City, getting, you know, to work for 2 years and even still now with General Stanley McChrystal, who led our forces in Iraq and Afghanistan, you know, and actually just released a book on character, which is a read I definitely recommend. We're getting to work with Julie Hsu when she was the acting secretary of labor, just world historic leaders. People like Jim Shelton, who was the head of innovation at the Department of Education and now is head of Blue Meridian, a big philanthropy collaborative. I have been fortunate to be in proximity to great leaders. And it's interesting about leaders is they don't always tell you something. The leaders that I have learned from, they show it to you. And, you know, I think about this now as a father. My son is 8. My daughter is 3. And everyone's watching. And I think one of the things I think about with leadership is a lot of people want someone, leader, come sit down with me and tell me all your knowledge. That's not usually how it works. One is the leader's busy. But secondly, you learn a lot more by watching than by what you're told. Again, you know, do as I do, not as I say. And so that's what I've been really fortunate to see. I see a lot of these great examples. And then also, I know who knows me, and you can see by the books behind me, I'm a student of history. And so being able to read enough about leaders, all of whom are imperfect, all of whom do certain things well, being able to, and this is something I recommend, like read. Because what you begin to get is pattern recognition. You begin to see certain things over and over and over again. You're like, oh, okay, I see. People who get certain places do this. Or then you begin to look at, okay, here's the pattern breaks. Okay, people who do this in this situation work well, but if you do this in another situation, that will not work well, so on and so forth. So I've been fortunate, I think, in my leadership journey to be close to great leaders, read about great leaders at volume and take some patterns. And then lastly, you just got to do it. in the end, I think a lot of people, and I think this is particularly true of people of color. This is particularly true. I see this in women a lot. I don't want to step into leadership until it's perfect, until I'm perfect. There is no such thing. There is no such thing. You just got to go and you got to lead. Now, you can be better or worse prepared. Like don't get stupid. Don't be silly. But at times, in the end, you see this with people who have worked twice as hard to be half as good, that they never quite feel like they're ready for leadership. And you just got to. At some point, you just got to sit in the chair, take the lumps, make the mistakes, but also move the ball forward. Because being a leader is like being an athlete. You can only read so many books about taking a jump shot. In the end, you just got to do it.
You just got to do it. You know, TK, that's the thing I've always liked about you. And that's what I found attractive about you is that leadership, that leader of one. It doesn't matter where you are, what you do, you're going to lead yourself to a certain place. And you're going to exude a certain amount of confidence. And sometimes I scratch my head. Does he really know that? But clearly he does. But at the end of the day, that leadership and that character just stands out and it says, I'm the guy. I'm out in front. I'm going to make this happen. And all the people around me should probably get in and follow me wherever I'm going. You've always exuded that type of confidence. And one of the things about that that's really so important is that a lot of people don't understand about leadership is it all starts with you have to understand how to lead yourself before you can even bring other people into the conversation or into the picture. And that's what I absolutely just love about you and the way that you've always carried yourself with a certain level of confidence and a certain amount of leadership.
First of all, that's really kind. And I'll maybe add to what you say here, which is, you know, the part about being out. First of all, number one, leading yourself. I think that is really important. There are a number of people who we've seen, and Julie, you talked about kind of we could use some more better leadership. But even where a lot of our leaders fall down, a lot of times they're falling down because they can't lead themselves. We're seeing people who, I believe character matters. I do think how you can put yourself matters. I think we've all met people who are supremely gifted.
Right.
But my pastor, he asked this phrase, the cap on your favor is your character. Meaning you might be favored, blessed to do a thing, but your character can actually cap how far that can take you. I believe that.
Right.
We could probably all name some names very recently.
Listen, I said when we started the introduction, when I read it, I said, I'm not going to ask you nothing about, because I got all kind of questions at the tip of my tongue for TK. Like, what do you think about?
So that's, I think, one. So generally, and I make it very simple, can I be a man that my parents would be proud of, who worked so hard for me to be here, and that my kids can be proud of? That's, yeah. I say it a lot. In the end, I will not shame my family. And that's really important. And that's a pact I make with myself and with God above. I think secondly, and the way you said it, Emmerich, which is, you know, I try and step out front. And at times, what you try and do, and I learned this from General McChrystal, as a leader, at times you stand out front to shield your team from the incoming. In some ways, the way he would always talk about leadership, and I loved it, is he said, a lot of leaders will think it's about me. It's about getting all the attention, all the credit, so on and so forth. Your job, and this is a critical thing about leadership, and I learned it the hard way when I first became a CEO of an organization, and stay with me for a second. You become a leader in an organization because you were good at doing whatever the job of the organization was. You were really, 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 really good. For example, I know about Keller Williams. Someone's really, really good at selling a property. They get really, really good at it. And then you say, you should be head of an office. The thing about being head of an office at Keller Williams is not just about selling real estate. In fact, what it's really about is helping the people who work for you sell real estate.
Right.
Your job is to help them do the job. And the way that General McChrystal used to talk about it was, it's like being a gardener. Imagine that you have a garden, which is your organization, and the plants in the garden are the people who work for you. Your job is to pull out the weeds, pull out the rocks, pull out all the things that could stop them from growing and keep the garden clear and free. And if I think about the leadership that Emmerich, and honestly, you model this literally on a regular basis. I remember when I first met you, you said, I want you to find your gift zone. I want you to find your gift zone, and I'm going to make space for you to grow with it. This is just within 100 Black men and us trying to help kids here in Prince George's County. And that was a very powerful example. And I think about leadership at my best, when I've been the greatest as a leader. It's been when I've found people who, they just need room to run, and they need a leader to get stuff out of their way and believe in them and give them the space and the resources. And so I think that is a critical thing, is what you'll see a lot with, for example, and you see this a lot with like small businesses. The person who's the CEO is the CFO, the CHRO, they sweep the floors, they take out the garbage, and they do that because that's all they know to do. But the challenge is the business will only get so big if they do that. At some point, you need some help so you can do what you're best at doing. And I think that's just a critical leadership lesson. And that takes some self-awareness. It also takes the ability to set ego aside sometimes so that the people who work for you can grow. Because those are the best leaders. And I'll use a teacher analogy. I started my career as a teacher. I taught in Best Side, Brooklyn. And someone said this to me once, which is, there are some teachers that when that teacher leaves the room and you put another teacher in there, the kids misbehave. And initially, people would say, oh, that's a great teacher. Only they can handle that room. That's actually not a great teacher. The great teacher is the one who they can be out for a day and you can put another teacher in there and the kids act the same.
Well, why is that?
Because what you've done is you've created such structures and created such culture that it's not dependent upon you. That is great leadership. I'm sure when I was a teacher, and that's how you knew that was a great teacher. Oh, wow. These kids behave no matter what. These kids are learning no matter what. And so you have to think about this for your organization. If I left here today, would this organization still run?
Yeah.
Still serve people the way they were supposed to, so on and so forth. If you're not there yet, then you still got some more work to do. And that's the thing I've learned watching from great leaders. Again, like one of the ones I'm looking at now.
You really hold Emmerich in high regard.
I do.
I feel like we owe you an apology, Unc.
A prophet is not a prophet in his home, in his own home.
I'm bad.
I hold him as a human being and as a leader in unbelievable regard. Not just because what he says, because of what I've seen.
Correct. I agree with that 100%. We joke with him a lot. He allows us to do that. We call him Unc.
But that shows his leader. That shows his leadership. There are some leaders that you couldn't do that with.
Yeah. And we do that because I don't even know if it's a secret code or I don't know if it's a secret anymore in our organization. Not too much about Black people or Black groups happens without Unc's approval.
Oh, yeah. I mean, wow. Not even approval. His enablement. Yeah, I can name for you 100 things that most people would have no idea that Emmerich is involved in, but he has helped make happen because of who he is.
Sure. Yeah.
There is a reason that Governor Wes Moore calls Emmerich Pease the man who chops the wood.
Yeah.
And when he said it, we all knew what he meant.
Home Team Inspection Service is changing the way agents and clients experience home inspections. Their team-based model, streamlined scheduling, and bundled packages, including home inspection warranties, make the process smoother from contract to closing. And with Pay at Close available in many locations, you can give your buyers more peace of mind with less upfront cost. Choose the team that works with yours. Visit hometeam.com to learn more.
But, you know, just shifting this whole thought, something you said, Chike, is that the ability of the organization to function without the leader. And I'm saying this only because I can relate to that. A lot of times I thought everything required me.
No.
And then, you know, as I got more mature, I understood that I had people in place, I had systems in place, and it didn't require me, which allows me to not even be existent in my market center, in my office, but hell, half the month, a lot of times, I can be someplace else. I don't even think about it. Matter of fact, I've been gone for almost a week and I haven't called anybody to figure out what's going on. And I'm not even concerned.
And that's because of the culture that's been created and also the practical structures that you've also created and the people, most importantly, the people that you've brought in, developed, so on and so forth.
Well, hold on. I didn't create anything. Julia already knows. She laughed and said, that Joker didn't create nothing. This organizational structure is weak.
But this is where, and I'm using you probably as the collective you in terms of the leadership, but also if you, for example, there are certain things that I am not good at. I am not. If my wife were here, she would give you a long
gift zone, gift zone, gift zone.
But if you are aware of that, you will bring in that person. You know, again, I go back to my pastor. He has this great phrase. When you don't know how, the answer is a who. It's very basic. I'm 41 years old. I am what I am.
Right.
I am what I am. So I had a boss once who told me, he said, any second you spend doing something other than what you're best at is a destruction of value.
I like that.
Any second that you spend doing something that you're not the best at is a destruction of value.
That's good. Yeah.
So the question is, who do you bring onto that team to do things like, for example, could I be a chief operating officer? I could be. It's not what I want to do. And there are people better at it than me.
Right.
Therefore, let me get the best chief operating officer and let me do what I'm great at. And then you get more greatness.
And that's where that conversation came. But I've always had that conversation about your gift zone. Working your gift zone and you'll never work another day in your life.
Yes.
And one of the other things I always say is, who's the who? Who's the who? Because you're only going to take this thing so far. The question is, who's the who in your life to help you get to the next level? And that's the reason why Julia did not let me read your bio, because she already knew it. She said, if I let Emmerich read this bio, she said, that is not his gift zone. He can talk, but don't let him read that thing, because something, he's only going to read every other sentence at best.
Can I ask you something, Chike?
Sure, please.
I mean, you have such a rich, well-rounded, we could ask you, we could talk about almost anything, but you've mentioned several things that are really hot topics right now.
Sure.
You mentioned immigration. You are the only person in your family. You mentioned education, particularly education at Harvard. You know, you've mentioned even just some of the social things that are going on, but you said one thing in particular that I wrote down, and you said education plus skill equals opportunity. And the reason I would love to hear you talk a little bit more about that is because, again, this podcast is to help people at least start the conversation or hear things that they've never heard before, to get education, at least get enough knowledge to be able to ask questions, you know, to educate yourself, because we have a lot of skilled people in the real estate industry, and many never went to school. That's why they're in real estate. They don't want to go to school. That's not their thing. But there is an interesting balance of what I've noticed with the guests that we have on here between, yes, you're just skilled, you're talented, you have it, maybe you even have great character, people love you, they like you, they call your phone all the time, you're got business on business on business, but maybe don't have any formal education, and even not even necessarily formal education, haven't taken on just being a lifelong learner. But you said education plus skill equals the opportunity. And I think the combination of both is what a lot of people are missing.
In the end, people care about what you can do. You know, in the end, I don't care if you are in government, I don't care if you're in business, what can you do? That usually comes from the skills that you have. People can get skills a number of ways. People can get skills from going to school, whether that be K-12, whether that be higher ed. People can learn skills on the job. I learn by doing. Some people can get skills through very short-term learning. My view is all of those types of learnings are equally valuable and equally important. I went to college more than once. I have deep belief in degrees. They can be really powerful, but they're not the only thing that matters. Right now, welding and fabrication in America is a six-figure job because we have so few of them. Hmm. We right now are looking to rebuild the Key Bridge right outside of Baltimore, and we don't know where all the welders and fabricators and machinists are going to come from to do it in the state of Maryland. We just don't. That's a shortage across the country. We're going to have to really be clear about that. The reason why I say at least opportunity is right now, if you look at the most important industries, whether it's things like healthcare, construction, or things like where I spend a lot of time now in these industries of the future, AI, quantum computing, commercial space, nanotechnology, hypersonic, none of them have enough people to build, maintain, or run all this stuff. None of them do. And so right now, if you can get the right education and the right skills, and the mix will be different for everyone, there's opportunity for you. And so that's just a key substrate of my life. And I've seen it in the data and I've seen it in practicality. And the thing now for you is, okay, what is it that I want to do? What are the skills required? All right. And then let me get there. And then, by the way, you talk about lifelong learning. This is going to change every 12 to 18 months because I'll use one example. Let's say, think about ChatGPT when it came out in late September of 22. If you had trained on AI in 2022, you would have been out of date by mid-2023. Because of how fast technology... Right now, everyone initially talks about prompt engineering. How do I write the right prompt for Claude or for ChatGPT or for Gemini? Now, that's still important, but what now is going to start having is agents. This is going to be where the AI goes off by itself after you tell it to do a thing, and it's going to come back to you later and say, I did that thing. That's an entirely different form factor of interaction. So anyway, that is just really important, which is the how do you get the right education, the right skills for the right opportunity? Mm-hmm. And then how do you prepare to, for the rest of your life, you're going to be upskilling, reskilling, and transforming yourself to keep up. To the best example that I can think of, and Emmerich, you served time in the military, is the war college approach. Once you become an officer, at a certain intervals in your career, you come out, you go to a war college for usually, I believe, up to a year. You learn all the next things, you go back in the field. We need that type of thinking and concept for every worker and every person in the economy. At some point, I'm going to come out regularly, get new skills, get new insights, and I'm going to go back in on the field. But anyway, let me stop there.
No, that's great because, dude, you know, right now we're talking about particularly our real estate audience. What's our conversation in this industry right now is this is a skill-based market. this is a skill-based, and we're having that conversation where we have a plethora of new ideas. We have all these different inputs, and we have an aging population in our industry. And that aging population in this industry, a lot of them aren't willing to adapt to the change and up-channel their skills, whether it's AI or whether it's just the latest technology. And it's showing in their businesses and their production because they're not producing at the same level that they were producing before because the younger generation, and I'm seeing this all the time, the younger generation, they're coming in their second and third year and their fourth and fifth year, and they're just killing the game. They're killing the game because they're skill-based. And Julia, I'm going to say this, like, if we really look at the industry, look at the way that place has revolutionized real estate. Wrap your brain around that. Those guys haven't really been around that long when you look at it in comparison to folks that have had companies that like historical 20, 30, 40 years come in the past 7 years, what they've done in this industry is crazy. And it's about skill. It's about upskilling. It's about the ability to and the willingness to adapt to change with that skill.
That's exactly right. Look, if you were to look at the companies in the Fortune 500 50 years ago, that list is almost entirely different today. So the issue is you also, without putting a business hat, there's competition. If you're not changing, somebody else is.
Either you're growing or you're dying. Either you're growing or you're dying.
And the barriers to entry. So in the old days, for a business like yours or any business, for someone to break into your business, that was hard. But now, particularly with technology, so for example, I am not a real estate person, but one hard thing for you all in real estate is lead generation. Who might be looking to buy a house or buy a piece of property? And how do I get in front of them? In the old days, it was all analog and all relationships. And again, this is where you all at KW shine. But there are some technological tools now to generate some of that too. Similarly, if you're trying to just get out correspondence, I'm sure there's a lot of like analogs of type all these letters, so on and so forth. I mean, ChatGPT, just using as one tool or Claude or whatever, I can generate those in 30 seconds over and over and over again, just reducing the time. Those are just two very basic examples. Any industry that you are in, there is someone behind you who wants your spot. To again, to use, I'm a big Marvel fan. So if you're thinking about Black Panther, if you King T'Challa, there's a Killmonger. He's behind you. He's waiting. He wants his spot. And someone else wants to be king. And so you can't afford to sit on your laurels and say, all that I have learned is good enough. Candidly, it's never good enough. If you look at the people who are like, who I admire, who are just like amazing leaders, always out of their field, it is because they're still learning. They're always learning. And, you know, when I think about, you know, my old boss, Julie Hsu, who was the Secretary of Labor, I mean, every, just for those of you who've never worked in an administration, if you work for a secretary, every day the secretary gets a, what's called a briefing book. It's literally a book of all of the next day's meetings and all the materials they have to read. That book, depending on the day, runs from 100 pages to 400 pages every day. There was never a day in almost 3 years that I worked for that woman that every page was read. And that was on top of other things she was reading, which I didn't understand it. I didn't understand how that woman put that much information in her brain. But that's what it took to operate at that level.
Can I ask you a question about that? I wrote that down too. Earlier, you said, if you can see behind me, you see I like to read. I wrote that down because, you know, there's a saying reading is fundamental, but nobody's reading. And people are not reading basic information, you know, like just basic instructions. Like I'll give you a basic example. There was a graduation party last week. Right on the front, it says all the information to get there. Nobody read it. They looked at the picture. They looked at the little video. They looked at the little meme. Nobody read basic information. So just basic reading, because we're people are attracted to, you know, fast and funny and memes and things. But what's in the books, Chike? What's in the books that we should actually be opening up and reading, and why should we read them?
So I think the phenomenon that I think that you're talking about that I feel is we have less patience and less attention than we used to. That is true.
Much less.
And so I don't necessarily know if it's an aversion to reading, but at times everyone feels like they have less time to do what they used to. Even, look, even me, I read a fair amount, probably maybe more than most. I do a lot of audiobooks. I'm in the car, I'm doing the dishes. I'm, you know, maybe my kids are at the park and I'm watching them play and I got something going. That's however you're taking in that information, I don't judge the format, but taking the time, you have to make that time. Because if one, it's just better for you and for us as a society, but candidly, if you are not, someone else is. That's like saying, I want to be in the league. I want to be in the NBA, and I'm not going to take the extra jump shot. I'm not going to go practice, you know, doing the left-handed dribble. You're just going to lose. And so I think that's that. And I think I go back to what I've learned. One, I just think at times, what I get from reading is a couple of things. One, just new frameworks. So when I was a McKinsey consultant, a very short time in my life, what they're really great at, or most consultants are great at, is they have frameworks. They're looking at a big complicated thing, and what they do is they put a framework on top of it to organize all the information and what they're seeing, to make sense of what they're seeing. So if you read enough, I think there are a lot of great business books that I can name, from Jim Collins, Good to Great, to a great book I just read from Brad Jacobs called How to Make a Few Billion Dollars, to Jeff Busgang from Harvard Business School, The Experimentation Machine, about the use of AI in startups. And I can name you a bunch of others. You just get ways to look at the world and you're like, oh, okay, I can make sense of this, even though it's so complicated, because of this framework that I read about. Secondly, and again, I read a lot of biographies. The best ones are like novels, but they're real. And if you read enough of them, particularly about people who've done things that are notable, again, you see these patterns. You see things, or you see, it's either good patterns or mistakes you see people make. Like, for example, you know, one thing that's always been driven home for me is the fault of hubris. You see a lot of great leaders mess up when they start to believe they can't mess up. For example, very basic understanding, but it's a really big one. The best ones are the ones who are constantly aware of their fallibility. And secondly, it's the ones who believe they can do it all themselves. The ones who have teams that can challenge them and so on and so forth. So that's just two examples of like pattern recognition. And then I think the last piece is, when I was a kid, my mommy says a lot, which is, a book can take you places you've never been. And so I think about this particularly for our young people to expand. You know, I'm thinking about, you know, we're here in Prince George's County, you know, which is my home county. I love it. You have someone who's never left Fairmont Heights. A book can take them to at least St. Palace or Buckingham Palace, or to the Great Wall of China, or to the future, to the past. And it can expand your mindset beyond what you see. So for me, it is the frameworks to look at the world, a lot of raw material to find patterns that make sense and that are important. And then lastly, just to take you places that you've not been, because we all know people who can only see what's in front of them. And that's not helpful. You need to see, usually great leaders create a thing that no one can see that doesn't exist.
And that's a beautiful thing. I love the way you put that, because like in the past, I have not been a reader. I've become, as I get more mature, I'm becoming more and more of a reader. I'm being transparent. For a while, I've had the smartest bookshelf ever.
Me too.
I've had the smartest bookshelf ever. But I begin to understand is in between those pages is that, just like you said, it's places that you have not been and places that you will never go. However, physically, your mind, those books can take your mind places that you never even thought about being. And it just opens up a whole different avenue for you to think about life, for you to experience life differently, which is really, really key. Now, there's some people that say, well, I don't like to read. I'm not. Well, this is that thing. Leaders are readers, right?
It's like saying you don't want to work out. Well, I mean, it's like saying you want to be healthy, but you don't want to work out.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I think it's important, just the repetition of it, because there's certain things that, like, everybody was upset about Project 25. Don't cut that. I'm not saying anything political. I'm just saying. But nobody actually read it. They didn't even know what they were mad about. They didn't actually read it. They just heard about what might be in there. Even our, let's do something even more basic, our franchise agreements. Have you read all 400 pages of that franchise agreement?
I've read pretty much a lot.
So some things have caused me to have to go back and be like, wait a minute, let me read this. Because when I signed it, I didn't. Right. You know, but if we were already in the habit of reading, sitting down and reading things, it wouldn't be so burdensome for me to read. In mine, when 400, I'm exaggerating, it was like 200. But it wouldn't be so burdensome for me to read 200 pages or 100 pages or any pages if you were in the habit of doing something that you need to be doing, because not only are leaders readers, we're not reading things that we need to read. And then we act like we know stuff we don't know.
Also, this is where, you know, obviously, hire lawyers. That's very basic. Very basic.
Right.
Hire lawyers. Like,
I can offer some basic feedback here. Yeah.
Get a lawyer that you trust. That's the other thing. Right. Look, my wife is a physician. She's a researcher at Johns Hopkins. I could try to read one of her research papers. I could try. I would understand maybe a third of it. Maybe. But because I trust my wife, sure, she can read it and tell me what's in it.
Yeah.
So having people that have expertise that you don't,
that's good,
who can read a thing that you don't. But again, anyone can read any of these books that are on the shelf behind me. Trust me, they're none of the rocket science.
Yeah.
And you would get something from it. And your point, Julia, about the repetition, it's a muscle.
Yeah.
It's a muscle. And particularly, I know, you know, and this came from me, like being able to go into a document and see what's and figure out, I need to read, that section's the important one. So on and so forth. That is also a skill that I think comes from reading and being able to take in information and ask. The other thing I'll say, the best leaders that I know, and I try and be this at my best, is asking really good questions. The leaders that I really respect, because you'll be in meetings and people are talking, you know, you're like, you're having a meeting about something, you're trying to figure out something. And finally, someone asks the right question. Hey, y'all, the thing we're trying to solve is this. What is the answer to this? Yes. Any leader who can get to that as a skill set really early, that's powerful. And you can actually ask, no, this is what we're actually trying to do here. This is the actual question.
That's the thing. That's the saying. They say the quality of your life is determined by the quality of the questions that you ask.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to be the smartest person. You got to be able to ask a quality question. And a lot of times the quality questions come from your general knowledge base.
Well, I was going to say we're at the end of our time, but there was one other thing that I wanted to say to or ask of Chike. You talked about proximity to great leaders, you know, and you mentioned several that you've had the privilege of working with. You know, you talked about the acting secretary, Julie Hsu, I think was her name.
Right.
And you talked about Bill Clinton, President Bill Clinton, and you were appointed by President Biden. You've been appointed by Governor Wes Moore. You've been, and you started this conversation by saying you've had the privilege to be around some really great leaders. How does one gain that type of access? If somebody's sitting there saying, how do I get that proximity? How do I get in the room? What would you recommend that someone could do to have proximity to, and maybe it's not President Clinton or President Biden, but just proximity to great leaders wherever they are?
And I think that last phrase is really important. I'll talk about kind of how do you get, you know, to boldface the leaders that everyone knows, but when you're young, prioritize working for great leaders. There may be leaders that people don't know their name, but great leaders are, again, they're great at pattern recognition. They're great at managing people. They're great at asking the right question. They're great at inspiring and motivating. They take that gardener point of view. They help people grow versus trying to feed their own ego. When you take those early jobs, prioritize that. I want to work for someone like that. I'll do whatever they need, but just focus on that. So that's number one. I think number two, be good at just getting stuff done. I know when I was a CEO, there were people on my team that if you gave them something, you knew it was handled. There's no thing that you can pay for that. To know that you can give something to a thing, again, you know, you all can be away from your office and stuff is getting done. That's great. That's a great feeling. When you're someone who's done anything done, leaders will watch you around because that's what they need.
Yep.
I think the last thing is being able to see around corners. And what I mean by that is there are a lot of people in an organization. If they're good, they'll tell you about a problem. Hey, Julia, Miss So-and-so is super mad about XYZ. A great person to have on your team who a leader wants, great leader is, Miss So-and-so is mad about X. I recommend you do this. I actually already brought up the link to order her this thing for her birthday and she'll be fine. Can I just click send? Are we good? The person who can do that, you're going to get hired all the time. I think that's that. So I think that's like, that'll get you, I think, with great leaders, whether people know the names or not.
Sure.
I think secondly, if you're trying to get close to quote unquote famous people, is this is why this is what Emmerich is so good at. Get to know everybody before their boldface name. Well, for example, when I first came to Maryland more than 12 years ago, I was introduced to a state senator up in Baltimore, young guy, who's now our state senate president. And he said, you should meet this guy. By the way, he's going to try and get you to move to Baltimore. I'd already decided I was coming to Prince George's County. And so I was going to move. But he and I, we had a great conversation. He had a daughter who's about to have a son, you know, so on. So I was about to get married and, you know, he gave me a little bit of advice. And then after son was born, we had sushi at like a shop right near Hopkins in Baltimore City. This is in October of 2013. That guy was Wes Moore. And I've been fortunate to call him a friend since then. Now, I'll be candid. If I probably tried to do that in 2022, as the man became governor, that's a little difficult. Because everyone wants to have sushi with the governor. Yeah. But again, he was someone that he and I clicked immediately. Yeah. I've been lucky to count him as a friend and really a mentor, a big brother. That's very much how I see him. And we have a relationship, I would like to say, built on trust and non-transaction and so on and so forth. So Big Law says, you never know who you're talking to. You do not know who you're talking to is going to become. Some people basically gravitate to, I'm going to gravitate to the bold, to the, who everyone wants to be around with, but you don't know where that person is going to be in 5 years. And you don't know who that person who you don't know right now, where they're going to be in 5 years. So be good to everybody. Get to learn from everybody. And then by hop, skip, starts, years ago in 2020, I ended up working for a presidential candidate, just literally like as a volunteer on policy, that person's name was, people couldn't pronounce his last name, kind of like me. His name was Pete Buttigieg, who then became the Secretary of Transportation, and we'll see what Pete does afterward. But again, back when I started working for him in 2019, no one thought he had any chance at all. They're like, who's this guy? I can't even pronounce his last name. I had high hopes for him, like a person of high ability and high character. But that's why I say, like, be good at what you're doing. Solve problems before they start. And then you never know where that next leader is going to come from. And by the way, that leader might be you. So just be good to everybody. Learn from everybody. And don't run where everybody's running. I think that's the other thing. Like, if you meet the best investors, what they'll tell you is, I made so much money in XYZ thing because no one else was here. I'll tell one quick story. One guy that I admire from afar, and I don't know him, is Robert F. Smith, founder of Vista Equity Partners. You'll remember him because in 2019, he was the keynote speaker at Morehouse, and he wrote off the entire student debt of the 2019 Morehouse class. He is probably worth $6 billion. Vista Equity Partners has $100 billion under management. They do enterprise software. If you put all their companies together, all 89 of them, they would be the sixth largest software company in the world. The reason he has made so much money is that in the late 90s, he was working at Goldman Sachs, and he was the first banker from Goldman Sachs to set foot in Silicon Valley back then. And really quickly, he saw this whole software thing is going to lead to huge growth, and only a couple of companies are going to win. Therefore, he quit Goldman and started what is now Vista Equity Partners. And that's why now he's worth $6 billion. Almost, right. He lost out to buying part of the Broncos to the Waltons because they have a lot of money. But like, he went where no one was.
Yeah, the road less traveled, huh?
The road less traveled.
Yeah.
I think about the DMV. Think about the person who bought the random townhouse on 13th and U in like 1996.
Whoo, that was about $80,000.
Yeah.
$70,000.
Yeah. Now I don't even know. I can even imagine what that would be.
1.5 plus.
Exactly. They went where no one was.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. Well, GK, we are at the end of our time, but you know what? We'll have to have you back.
I appreciate you. Thank you for what you do. Thank you for inviting me, and thank you for having this space to talk about this.
We'd like to ask our guests if there is one thing that you'd like our listeners to have gotten from this conversation. What is the one thing you'd like to leave them with?
Oh, it's a great question. Basic things: be good to yourself, be good to others, and for whatever great leader that you see out there, the distance between them and you is much smaller than you think.
That's good.
They're not superheroes. They don't have superpowers. Yeah. They're great people.
Yeah.
But anyone can be great.
Mm.
That's awesome. Thank you, TK, for being here. Thank you, Emmerich, for introducing him to us. And thank you, TK, for reminding us who we have in our midst every day with Uncle Emmerich Peace. You called him Dr. Peace.
That's what I call him whenever I see him, Dr. Peace.
I'm going to correct myself from here on out. Doc, it is. But thank you, TK, for being with us. Thank you, Emmerich. And thank you all for tuning in to another fabulous episode on the Color of Money podcast. Y'all take care. Follow the Color of Money podcast today and get notified when new episodes are released weekly.
Be part of this transformative listening experience.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not Keller Williams Realty LLC and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information. Any text or materials generated by artificial intelligence, AI, should be reviewed for accuracy and reliability, as there may be errors, omissions, or inaccuracies.